love to see her reflection. Dylan hitched her eyebrows and shrugged. But at least it's not pink, like her pants. Peyton glanced over her shoulder and shot her sister a smirk. Don't you for 1 minute think I didn't consider bubblegum pink? Oh, I know you did. The engine is an 1192cc 8-to-1 compression. Brody continued, even though everyone had tuned him out more than a minute before. Stainless steel valves, dual springs, solid rocker shafts. I always wanted one of these, Mama said, almost in a daze. Dylan watched her from afar as she allowed her eyes to slowly take in each and every centimeter of shiny red and crisp white detail. She could almost see her imagining herself, a wild and free 16-year-old, driving through town without a care in the world. If only. Their daddy finally stood and looked over his shoulder at Dylan. I feel bad not giving you a car, too, he said. She kicked the dirt ground below her, causing the swing to sway. Car isn't what I want. He pulled out a folded manila envelope from his back pocket as he walked toward her. You know, it took me almost the entire year to get your mama to even consider your request. Dylan jumped out of the swing but contained her excitement enough not to hop around like her sister had. She said yes? He handed her the envelope. Dylan gripped the corner, tore it open within seconds, and pulled out a stack of pamphlets. Daddy chuckled. Look out, Europe. Here she comes. She pulled the stack to her chest in a hug. I can't believe it. You sure that's what you wanted? You've got to wait a full year to... She jumped into Daddy's arms and hugged him tight. It's exactly what I wanted. While Peyton begged and begged for the beautiful piece of transportation that she, Mama, Nana, and Brody were ogling, all Dylan wanted was a getaway. A summer abroad was her opportunity to escape Mama's clutches and tour Europe, as well as make some friends that weren't from Cornwall and didn't even know she had a sister, especially not a perfect one. It was her first chance of freedom in 16 years, and the only one she'd have before college finally took her away for at least 4 years. Over Daddy's shoulder, Dylan watched Brody stand and walk to them. I gotta admit, I was a little disappointed that I didn't get to work on a car for you, too. Why's that? She asked. There's no telling what you would have picked. Probably a hot rod or something. Dylan shrugged. Hadn't thought about it. It was the truth. Unlike her sister, Dylan hadn't even considered asking for a car for her birthday. She spent most of her time with either Cole or Peyton, and both would have vehicles. So her transportation needs were all but taken care of. Or she could walk, which she actually enjoyed. She held out the pamphlets and waved them in the slight Mississippi breeze. I'm going to Europe next summer. Wow. Even Brody seemed impressed. He'd never been outside the state, let alone on a plane to another country. That's cool. Not as cool as a remodeled car, but cool. When do you leave? Early June, a little over a year from now. Shook a long, satisfying breath and looked over at him with what she was sure was a sparkle in her eye. Imagine that, Brody. In a year, I'll be out of here. Dylan looked back toward the driveway and saw Peyton flip herself so she was nestled on her knees, facing the tree swing and running her angel necklace across the chain. Your trip is going to be awesome, but in the meantime, I'll be driving around in this beautiful car. There won't be a doubt in anyone's mind who's heading their way when Ladybug and I are coming down the street. You watch. I'll be the envy of every girl this side of the Mississippi. Dylan rolled her eyes, turned, and walked back toward the house. Okay, except maybe you. Chapter 8. August 12th, 2017. 3:50 p.m. Peyton sat between an aged brick wall and an old rusted washing machine in the gravel alley behind the Suds Four Duds, and a bit away from a mass of black smoke that rose into the air in torrential amounts. Her heart raced, and her fingers tingled, her toes in a tight curl against her flip-flop. Excitement, craziness, chaos. It all unfolded on the other side of the building, although she didn't necessarily understand how she got in her particular predicament. Anyone who saw the cloud from afar would assume that something much more substantial than her little red convertible was up in smoke. That is, of course, if there were anyone left in town who were actually at a distance. As it was, it appeared that every living soul stood on the sidewalk to watch as fire consumed the car's metal body. Even the small city bus pulled off to the side of the road. Every occupant's face was glued to the windows in awe and wonderment. It was a spectacle. Other than the disappearance of Dylan, a little more than a year before, this was the biggest thing to happen in Cornwall since Opal Wonders ran into the fire hydrant over on Cypress Street back in 1992, and the entire town lost water service for 2 days. But, according to Nana, whenever she told the story, that wasn't even the most newsworthy part. What really raised everyone's eyebrows was the fact that Miss Wonders was wearing nothing but a dress slip, and when she climbed out from behind the wheel, the water flowing out of the hydrant soaked the thin material and gave all those watching from the sidewalk quite a show. While she wasn't wearing a slip dress, Peyton could certainly understand how it felt to be the center of attention at the worst of times. The ragtag volunteer fire department had presumably decided not to waste any water on Peyton's vehicle. The three men, who happened to be the town veterinarian, the adult entertainment club owner, and newspaper editor, did nothing more than keep people at a safe distance. In fact, she looked around the corner and saw Harold England pull a notepad out of his shirt pocket and jot down some notes, showing he was much more interested in getting the story than fighting the fire. After all, this story was front-page news in a 4-page newspaper, 2 of which were devoted to sports. Just as Peyton originally intended, everyone in town knew it was her when she drove around. The car became her identity, Peyton Brave and her cute, bright red bug. Now that part of her was gone. Peyton heard footsteps approach from behind her. She turned and spotted Brody walking in her direction. His motor oil-stained overalls and red T-shirt covered his husky build, and his moppy hair partially covered his eyes. He was in his own world, looking at his phone with a huge smile on his face as he moved down the alley. He looked up and startled at seeing her sitting there. She hid her face behind her hands and peered at him through her split fingers. "Pretend you don't see me, Brody." He shoved his phone in his pocket. "Pretend? I can't. I'm not good at acting." "It's best if you leave now, or you're going to witness a murder right here in the alley." His mouth dropped open, and he slowly eyed the area. "Murder?" Peyton lowered her hands to the ground and peeked around the corner at her burning car, then tucked back behind the wall. "Yep, I'm dead." Brody walked to the corner of the building and looked toward the street. "What did you do to Ladybug?" "Nothing. You burned her up. Why would you go and do a thing like that?" "I didn't. She just caught on fire." "Cars maintained like yours don't just catch fire, Peyton." He scratched his head and started pacing. His heavy work boots struck the pavement with a thud each time he set a foot down. "I worked hard on that thing. She was beautiful. Some of my best work." "Maybe you can fix her." His attention skipped from Peyton to Ladybug until he finally groaned and shook his head in what appeared to be utter disgust. "There's going to be nothing left to fix. Look at her." Peyton sighed. "Yeah, I know. She's a goner." "Peyton?" Cole's daddy Carl, the owner of County Road Gentlemen's Club, walked toward her with a smile. No matter the circumstance, he always had a smile on his face. Peyton always figured it was due to his occupation. "Peyton, your daddy's on his way."
"I'm dead."
"Say what?" he asked.
"My daddy's going to kill me. I'll be the next person on his slab."
"Quit saying that," Brody grumbled. "Hey, now, he's not going to kill you. You didn't do nothing wrong."
"Carl, my car's in the middle of the street with fire pouring out of it. Isn't that the very definition of wrong?"
"Well, it's wrong, sure, but you didn't cause it."
"Trust me, someone's about to be planning my funeral."
"I don't think you should talk like that, given the circumstances. It kind of loses its hilarity, saying you're dead and all."
"I suppose, if you say so."
"I say so." Brody stopped pacing and stared down at her. She could almost feel the weight of his disappointment. "What do you think your mom is going to do? I mean, everyone in town is watching this." Peyton sighed.
"She'll be horrified at all the negative attention."
Carl turned and watched the fire. Peyton did the same, and then eyed the crowd. A lot of people took pictures and video with their cell phones,
which only solidified Peyton's shame. Others chatted or stood with their eyes wide and their mouths hanging open. A loud explosion startled Peyton and drew her attention back to the blaze.
"It was just a tire," Carl explained.
"Ah, crap," Brody groaned. "Your daddy's here."
Peyton watched Brody head back down the alley the way he came.
"Wimp, consider yourself uninvited to dinner."
"This is one I don't mind missing,"
he yelled over his shoulder as he disappeared down the street. Peyton turned and clasped into the fireman's leg and gave him her most pleading look.
"Please don't go anywhere, Pay, please."
"All right, I'll stay right here."
"Peyton?" Daddy ran up, his face practically ghost white. He knelt down in front of her, placed his hands on either side of her face, and did a quick inspection.
"Are you okay?"
"I'm fine. I managed to escape before the fire got too intense."
"Well, thank God for that."
He stood, rested his hands on his hips, and stared at what was left of the car.
"David?"
Carl said with a small nod and greeting.
"Hey, Carl."
Daddy shook Carl's hand and turned his attention back to his daughter.
"What happened?"
"Daddy, I can explain. Well, okay, I can't." Another explosion rained through the air.
"That was a tire," Carl said quickly before Daddy could be alarmed.
"Why aren't you guys trying to put the fire out?" her daddy asked.
"By the time we got here, there was nothing we could do. There was no salvaging it."
"So we just let it burn?"
"Yep, we've got to let it burn itself out."
"Okay, well..."
He watched the flames for several more seconds and then looked down at his daughter. She could sense the pure, unadulterated pity in his eyes.
"Let's go, Peyton. No sense in making you sit here and watch it perish."
Drained from all the drama and attention, she slowly stood and picked up her iPhone and purse, and then spotted the distant parking lot and groaned.
"Aw, Daddy, do you have to bring the hearse? It's so embarrassing."
"I thought you were burning to death in a car. I didn't stop to think which one of the vehicles would embarrass you the least. I jumped in the one that was closest to the exit."
She dropped her head in shame and utter humiliation, and then followed behind him as they made their way through the alley so she could avoid having to endure more gawking glares.
"There is not a body in the back, is there?" she asked. "I don't think I can handle 3 deaths in less than 24 hours.
3?
Misty's baby, Ladybug, and whoever's in the back of that thing."
"There's nobody in the back."
"Thank God for small favors."
He opened the car door and waited for her to climb all the way inside.
"Sit tight for a minute. I'm going to go talk to Harold."
Just before he shut the door, he lowered his face to hers.
"And you're sure you don't know what happened?"
She had a momentary flash, a raging fire. The heat from the flames felt like it was burning the large grin off her face, and the keychain she held tightly in her hand warmed in the heat. The metal keys woven between her fingers, becoming almost unbearably hot. Peyton looked up at her daddy and smiled lightly.
"No, sir. I'm sorry."
She gulped.
"I have no idea what happened."
4:20 p.m.
"Hey, Dylan!"
Peyton looked over at her daddy with her perfectly practiced puppy dog eyes.
"Please, I'm too worn out to correct her again."
Daddy wrapped his arm around Peyton and squeezed her tight.
"She's a bit confused, that's all."
"A bit?"
"Okay, a lot."
He kissed her on the temple.
"No, Nana," Daddy soothed with a look back to his mother-in-law. "This is Peyton. Remember? Peyton?"
Nana grimaced.
"Cotton picking."
Daddy and Peyton walked up the porch steps and joined her on the patio.
"It's all right."
He took her hand in his.
"Well, what on earth happened to her? You ran out of here like the house was on fire or something."
"The house wasn't on fire, but her car was."
Nana's eyes widened.
"Well, I'll be."
Maggie walked into the embalming room and told me that someone called and said Ladybug was on fire, and then hung up. I was scared out of my mind.
He squeezed Peyton close again, like he was double-checking that she was actually still standing there.
They didn't say where she was or if Peyton was in the car.
"Sorry,"
Peyton muttered. "I drove down Main until I got past the tree line and then saw the smoke plume coming from the center of town. Led me straight to her."
Nana nodded, as if she was all-knowing.
"Like the 3 wise men followed the North Star."
"Something like that."
Daddy kissed Nana on the top of the head and finally let go of his daughter.
"Of course, everyone in town got there before I did. They just stood there and stared at me as I ran around looking for her. I was frantic.
Of course you were. You're a good daddy. Good daddies worry.
He smiled down at her.
I suppose they do.
Peyton watched Daddy walk inside and leave her and Nana to deal with Joshua, who had just pulled in the parking lot with a screech loud enough to cause Nana to stop rocking, sit forward in her chair, and crane her neck to try to get a good glimpse of the possible bus. Joshua jumped out and walked to the bottom of the porch steps.
You're alive? Looks like I'm standing here, so...
How?
My dad drove me home. I mean, how did you get out of the car?
Peyton struggled to understand what he meant by the odd question.
I heard there was an explosion, he added. Well then, you heard an exaggeration.
You scared people to death.
How's that?
Maggie called Lindy's mama, screaming that your car was on fire and you weren't answering your phone calls. So her mama drove by and saw your car on fire, but you were nowhere to be found.
Everyone assumed the worst.
They always do.
Lordy, I know that's true, Nana said.
He pulled his cell phone out of his pocket and started typing. The whole friggin' school is in an uproar. They thought another brave girl. Anyway, my phone was blowing up with questions.
In Peyton's experience, lightning-speed group text messages help destroy someone. But in this particular instance, it was nice to hear it be used to announce that her family hadn't lost another girl after all.
Sorry you were bothered. She realized her palm ached, and when she glanced down, saw her car keys were grasped tightly in her hand. She loosened her grip, raised her hand, and inspected the key teeth marks in her skin.
You aren't hurt?
No.
A flash of red caught her eye. She raised the keys and closely inspected them, noticing small chips of red paint stuck into the grooves of several keys.
Not even a little.
She didn't respond. She stared at the paint chips, and what seemed like a memory filled her mind of glancing around the school parking lot, then scraping the edge of her keys across the side of Ladybug, until she'd left a deep, metallic crevice in the otherwise perfect paint job.
Peyton.
Joshua nearly scolded.
She came back to the moment and looked up at him.
Nope. Not a scratch or a burn. I'm completely unharmed.
He slid the phone back into his pocket and left his hand inside. He smiled, but she noticed it disappear moments later when Cole pulled his old truck into the parking lot. He glared over at Joshua for a brief moment before climbing out of the cab.
Guess I better go, Joshua said. See you at school in the morning.
Joshua turned and stared at Peyton as Cole approached. She wasn't sure, due to the slight distance, but she thought she saw his jaw harden and the corner of his eyes tightened before he climbed into his car and peeled away. Although Cole hadn't actually done anything to cause Joshua to dislike him, like with so many others in town, it was well known that Joshua's daddy wouldn't let him hang out with the likes of a strip club owner's son. But Dylan, choosing Cole over Joshua, seemed to compound his hatred for Cole.
All these cars and not one bloomin' bus anywhere.
Peyton glanced over her shoulder at Nana, who was now sitting up straight and staring after Joshua's car.
What kind of bus station is this?
Cole walked up the steps and knelt down in front of Nana, just as he did every time he came to the house. He handed her a flower and kissed her on the cheek.
How are you doing, Nana?
I'm good, Coleman.
Still waiting? He asked.
Patient as Noah waiting on the snails.
I know that's true.
He gave her a gentle pat on the knee before standing, Peyton's quizzical eyes on him the entire time.
My mom asked me to come get the vases that we left for the suitor funeral last week.
Did you hear about Ladybug?
Not much, but I saw the smoke.
It made sense that he wouldn't stay up to date on the latest local gossip, especially seeing as how he and his daddy were so often the topic of it. Carl never marrying Cole's mama, plus owning the local strip club, seemed to give everyone the opinion that they could make up just about any old story about his family and spread it as the truth. Cole once told Dylan that he'd learned to ignore it all and go on with his life. And if he couldn't ignore it, he turned his hearing aids off so he couldn't hear it.
What happened to her?
Peyton rested her forehead against the edge of the open front door.
I don't even have the energy to explain. Give me a few minutes. I'll get your mama stuff.
Without saying a word, Cole picked up Pugsley and sat in the seat next to Nana. Peyton watched Pugsley make himself comfortable and then walked inside, leaving the trio to wait for the elusive bus. A few minutes later, she walked out the front door with the box of vases in her arms. Nana's chair sat empty, but Cole was still in his chair holding Pugsley. The dog looked right at home. Of course, Pugsley's known Cole longer than he'd known the Braves. Cole gave the pug puppy to Dylan 2 years earlier. Peyton still remembered when he'd carry Pugsley up the front porch with a big red bow tied around his neck. Dylan ran onto the patio in a fit of squeals, but the puppy infuriated Mama to the point of conniption fits.
"Where's Nana?" she asked.
Bus station closed.
Oh, of course.
She dropped into the seat Nana left vacant, took a deep breath, and slowly let it out.
She's gone.
She looked over at him, curious as to what his response would be. Cole looked up at her, and his eyebrows were low and practically touching beneath his heavily creased forehead.
"Ladybug," she added, "burnt to the ground. There's nothing left of her but the metal frame."
He nodded, but didn't provide her with any real reply.
"Please talk to me. I don't like quiet."
"Why? What's wrong with a little quiet?
It makes my mind wander."
His expression softened. "Where does it end up?" Peyton hesitated, turned, and absently scanned the quiet, tree-lined street.
"With Dylan?"
When she turned back to him, she noticed he was surveying her face. Uncomfortable with the sputter it caused in her chest, she quickly looked away. Cole placed Pugsley back on the ground, stood, and picked up the box of vases.
"Sorry for your loss."
"Loss of which? Dylan or my car?" she asked. He glanced at the ground, then back to her.
"Both."
Chapter 9, August 12th, 2016, 5:30 p.m. Dylan twisted her big toe deeper into the sand. She was surrounded by the upper echelon and wanted to be almost anywhere else. Or better yet, wanted them to be anywhere else.
"You sure you don't want to hang out with us at the bonfire?" Star asked.
"Doubly sure, but thanks for the offer." Cole and Misty stood in the back of Cole's truck and looked down at Dylan while Peyton adjusted the large crown resting on Dylan's head. Usually Peyton was the one being crowned, but she still knew exactly how to pin a crown on someone else, even an oversized one. Possibly because Peyton, Mama, and Nana loved to watch beauty pageants together, and Dylan and Daddy loved to find just about anything else to occupy their time while they did. "Ouch!" Dylan winced at a bobby pin practically stabbing into her skull.
"Sorry, hold your head steady."
"It is steady. You need to be more careful." She felt Peyton's hands grip her head and force it to the center over her shoulders.
"Quit your gritchin'."
"Who has bobby pins with them at the beach? Where'd they come from anyway?"
"My ponytail.
Now shush." Another pin scraped the surface of Dylan's scalp, but eventually rested in a clump of hair.
"There.
Perfect," Peyton announced. Lindy crossed her arms over her chest and glared over at them. "You just won the King of the Mountain Championship. I think it's required that you be at the bonfire." Dylan glanced up at Cole and Misty and then cut her eyes back to Lindy. "And who would require that?"
"Us,"
Star spat.
"Oh, got it. Thanks for the warning, but I think we've got plans of our own."
Lindy looked back into the truck bed and eyed Cole.
"I'm sure you do."
Peyton put her hands on her sister's shoulders and placed her face next to Dylan's.
"Let the queen be, all right? There'll be plenty of people at the bonfire. After all, it leaves more s'mores for us."
"Always the peacemaker," Dylan muttered. Peyton walked around Dylan and moved toward the fire.
"See you at home later."
Misty watched the royal court walk away, then jumped out of the truck bed.
"I'm out of here."
"Why?" Dylan asked.
"I'm pretty sure you two would prefer to be alone."
Dylan arched her left eyebrow, knowing full well there was more to the story.
"And?"
"Joshua asked if I might want to hang out." Dylan and Cole exchanged a quick, knowing glance as Misty grabbed her towel and beach bag.
"Have fun, you two."
"You too," Dylan said, "but not too much fun.
It's Joshua Tubin, after all."
Misty walked away, seemingly ignoring the warning, and left Dylan and Cole on their own for the first time all day. Dylan hopped up onto the tailgate, wiped the sand off her feet, and readjusted her crown. Love my sister for trying, but my crown's still a little off. Well, you're a little off, so it fits. Cole arranged the cushions he'd borrow from his mama's 70s-style couch. One early morning, when Dylan and his mama Val drug Cole garage sale shopping, his mama bought the sofa for $15. A tropical storm had just passed through and flooded the seller's house. They were even lucky enough to find matching pillows a few houses later, and there were plenty of them to cover the couch. Or, as often happened, fill Cole's truck bed so he and Dylan could lay out under the stars and pretend that the rest of the world didn't exist outside the truck bed walls. She playfully threw her sweatshirt at him, but he caught the sleeve while most of the shirt was still in her hand, pulled her to him, and kissed her quickly before he fell back into the pillows. "Maybe I am a little off, but I still beat you out on that platform, so..." "Very true." He extended his long legs out in front of him in the shape of a V. "You're the queen of the mountain. That's quite an accomplishment. You impress me." Dylan inched along the truck bed, crawled into Cole's lap, and arranged herself so she sat with her back against his chest and her head resting just beneath his collarbone. "You know, we should probably be at the bonfire, celebrating with Peyton and the others." "Since when do you do what Peyton and the others are doing?" "Since never?" "Exactly." Dylan reached into her bag, pulled out her now-worn legal-sized manila envelope, and removed the stack of brochures. "Here's an idea. We can plan our trip." Cole kissed her on the temple and wrapped his arms round her as she opened the first brochure. "The Louvre. I can't say I'm excited about that one," he admitted. "I've heard you can spend weeks in there and still not see the same thing twice." "Weeks, huh?" "Weeks." Maybe it was all the Disney princess movies her mama forced her to watch, or a love of any place other than Cornwall. But Dylan had admittedly started fantasizing about Europe, castles, and strolling ancient streets to a near-obsessive point. And while Cole wasn't really much for travel or airplanes, he'd agreed to go on the trip since it meant a lot to her. He'd even worked extra hours at his mama's store and cleaned his daddy's club every morning to raise the money to go. She knew that for Cole, it would be the trip of a lifetime, but for her, it would be the first trip of many. "Peyton's so sick of me talking about our trip," she claimed this morning. "She'd puke the next time I brought it up." "I'm sure she'd follow through on the threat, as long as she could do it like a lady," he laughed. "We'll be off exploring the world, and she'll be here." She eyed the bonfire and the royals performing their annual duties, doing the same thing she always does. She nestled deeper into his chest, as if she could hide away there and escape the world. "We leave in less than 9 months." "Think about that. 9 months from now, our lives will be completely different." "It's weird to think about, but honestly, I'm shocked that your mom even agreed to let you go. Especially since I'm going too." Dylan closed the first brochure, shoved it back into the envelope, and opened the next, the Palace of Versailles. "Dylan?" There was an accusatory tone in his voice. "You told her, right?"
"You know Marie Antoinette, the queen that got her head chopped off? Although I can't remember why."
"Dylan?" She shoved the other brochures into the envelope, sat up, and turned around as he burrowed his face in his hands.
"You promised," he moaned. "I'm gonna tell her."
He lowered his hands and gazed over at her. Usually the pout on her face was enough to distract him, or make him go easy on her. But it wasn't working this time. "You were supposed to tell her before they bought the tickets, so they'd known the whole story before they said yes.
But if I told her you were going, they never would have said yes at all. You know that.
They could have surprised you."
"No, they couldn't."
She sat cross-legged and tried her hardest to make sad eyes that were even half as effective as Pugsley's.
"She can't even deal with us dating right under her nose. There's no way she'd allow it."
Dylan studied the woods surrounding them.
"You know what they say?
Cornwall has eyes. I'm convinced those eyes are my mama's. Do you think she'll ever realize we're actually pretty good together and stop trying to break us up all the time?"
"Pretty good? We're great."
Cole took a deep breath and blew it out in a gush of wind. It's exhausting. No matter what I do, it's not enough.
It will be. Dylan looked up at him and felt a rush of adoration flow through her.
You're smart. Kind. Trust me, Cole. She'll see it all one day.
But she'll never accept me if she finds out you're lying to her. She'll blame me. I'm not lying. I'm withholding information.
He looked over at her. His face was deadpan.
Look cute all you want, but I'm not dropping this.
When they first started dating, Cole always gave in. He let her win any argument, and she suspected it was because it was easier than trying to convince her that she might be wrong. Eventually, however, he decided to stand his ground and play hardball, or at least play as hard as she did. His face turned stern. If you don't tell her, I will. Cole! No way am I going to let you go another day without her knowing. So, you tell her, or I will.
Dylan straightened her body and stiffened her face. It was meant as defiance, but Cole wasn't fazed by it.
The longer you wait, the worse it's going to be. Fess up.
The last time I tried to talk to Mama about us, she talked me into breaking up with you and going out with Joshua.
He groaned.
How'd that work out?
Huh?
We found our way back together. So I say it worked out pretty well. And no matter what she's done, she deserves the truth.
Dylan felt the fight leave her body.
Fine. I'll tell her tomorrow before we leave for Charleston. At least that way she'll have a few days to calm down before she sees me again.
If they take my tickets away, I'll just get another job, or two.
Pay for it myself.
Daddy paid both girls minimum wage to help him at the funeral home, but Dylan spent a lot more hours working there than Peyton did, and she knew she had enough customer service or office work experience to get a job at any small business. As the only mortician in town, Daddy had the corner on the funeral business, which meant almost anyone who was anyone had been to her house and seen her hard at work or helping with the funeral. She ran her hand over the manila envelope.
I'll be on that trip no matter what.
We'll make it work, right?
For you? He grinned over at her.
Absolutely.
Dylan smiled back at him. She still got butterflies when he looked at her. A look of complete devotion and acceptance. He knew her better than anyone, and he loved her anyway.
You're really dreamy, she said, only half teasing.
He laughed. No way. You're not buttering me up. She playfully crawled toward him.
What do you mean?
Buttering you up? Cole leaned back and playfully pushed her away. You know exactly what I mean. Your games won't work. I'll still tell her if you don't. She collapsed into his arms with a sigh.
I'll tell her in the morning. Promise.
Thank you. He slightly lowered his face to hers, letting their lips meet for a brief moment.
Cole, this time next year, we'll just be back from an awesome adventure.
We'll be sophisticated, cultured world travelers. We won't be afraid of anything, and we'll be ready to get out of Cornwall forever.
That sounds perfect.
Chapter 10, August 13th, 2017, 6 p.m. Peyton reached across the desk to hold Misty's hand, unsure what else she could do. They'd sat facing each other for over 30 minutes, a funeral brochure between them, but Misty hadn't stopped crying enough to speak. Peyton didn't know what to say. This wasn't a normal circumstance, like speaking with the family of an elderly person who'd lived a full life, or a sick person who'd been warned death was approaching. Instead, it was facing the end of several futures. Mama told Peyton that the Gibbs and Misty came to an adoption decision almost immediately after she found out she was pregnant. They'd paid all of her medical bills and went to her doctor's appointments, but they weren't in the hospital room when the baby was born. They quickly realized it couldn't survive, and they didn't feel it was their responsibility to arrange and pay for a funeral. They'd agreed to adopt a baby, not a body. Peyton tried not to judge the Gibbs for deserting Misty in her time of need. Their dream just died, and they weren't thinking properly. There were a lot of people who lost their minds or weren't able to think clearly after their loved one departed. Sadly, it was common. Nobody knew that better than the Braves. But again, Misty's situation was different. Since her parents kicked her out of the house and the Gibbs walked away,
Misty was left to not only arrange but pay for the funeral of a child she never intended to keep but still loved.
I asked Cole to come over. He should be here any minute. I know you two are friends, and I thought you could use the additional support.
Misty nodded as she wiped her nose with a balled-up tissue. Peyton waited for just the right time to speak again. That moment when Misty's chest stopped heaving and her eyes cleared, when the tears became more of a puddle than a downpour.
"What about the father?" she asked. "Do you think he or his family might be willing to help?"
"No way."
"Are you certain?"
Misty glanced down at the floor and shifted in her chair.
"We dated off and on for 8 months. Or at least he thought we did. I never went out with anyone else. We were only together once. My first and only time, and I got knocked up. I swear my life is like the perfect example of what not to do."
Peyton couldn't come up with a good response, so she said nothing.
"He dumped me for good the next day," she continued, "in April when I figured out I was pregnant. I tried to tell him, but he didn't want anything to do with it. He told me it was my problem, and that if he had had his way, I'd get an abortion. Of course, he wasn't willing to help pay for it or anything. Not that I would have done it if he had. I swear I wanted to rip his head off and spit down his throat."
"Does he know the baby was born?" Missy raised her head.
"Didn't you tell him?"
"Me? Tell him? Tell who?"
"Joshua."
Peyton's breath caught in her throat as her mouth clamped shut. If she hadn't already been sitting, she would have fallen to the floor in shock, awe, and a hefty amount of distress.
Joshua?
Joshua Tubin?
Misty nodded, a grimace on her face. "Joshua Tubin's the father."
"Didn't he tell you?"
"Why would he tell me?"
"Aren't you two together now?"
"Together? No. Not even close. I mean, he tried, but I..."
"He told me he finally realized we were meant for each other." Misty's grimace intensified to a near cringe, and that he thought he was falling in love. I was stupid enough to believe him. The puddle of tears again became a downpour. Peyton pushed the chair back and peeked under the desk and momentarily contemplated hiding underneath. As she listened to Misty repeat some of the same phrases Joshua tossed her way during their hike, she felt physically ill. It was puke-worthy.
"I'm sure it's different with you."
Misty's face brightened a bit, and her eyes widened.
"Maybe he's learned his lesson. A tiger doesn't usually change his spots."
"Don't you mean stripes?"
"Those either."
Peyton's mind raced, and her anger and embarrassment intensified by the second. For a moment, she wished she'd followed him down that trail and pushed him right over an embankment. A car honked outside. Peyton stiffened, and she swore she actually saw red.
"What's the matter?" Misty asked.
"Who is it?"
"The tiger."
Peyton stood and worked to erase the increasingly appealing vision of pushing him over the valley edge.
"I'm going to give him a chance to redeem himself. See if he'll help with this burial."
"You think he might?" There was hope in Misty's voice and a light in her eyes that made Peyton feel bad for even offering the suggestion.
"I doubt it, but it's worth a shot."
Peyton picked the cell phone up off the desk and shuffled it around in her hand.
"Misty, why don't you go hang out in the family room? Make yourself at home."
She walked toward the door and glanced over her shoulder. "And be sure not to set your food on the coffee table. Pugsley'll have it and be gone before you even notice. He's fat, but he's fast." Peyton stormed out of the house, past Nana and off the porch. Joshua leaned against his car. A large grin was on his face, and he held a small bouquet of flowers in his hand.
"Ready to go?"
"Nope."
She stopped a few steps away from his car and hung her thumbs on her back pockets. Anger surged through her body so forcefully that she had to concentrate on keeping her feet to the ground so she wouldn't surge across the yard and wrap her hands around his beautifully tanned but pretentious throat.
"You look upset." "You think?"
Sarcasm. Peyton wasn't necessarily known for it, but she couldn't help herself. It felt appropriate and sounded natural. With impeccable timing, Cole pulled up beside Joshua's car. He got out and walked inside with only a nod to the pair. Once Cole was inside the house, Joshua turned his attention back to Peyton.
What's the problem? Did you get Misty pregnant?
The smile melted off his face. His usually puffed-out chest caved.
Did you?
Peyton demanded. He shook his head.
It was a mistake. The whole thing was a mistake. You and I were together at the cove where Mama told me the baby was born. You didn't say anything.
What was the point? What does that have to do with us?
You don't think I'd want to know that before I decided whether or not to go out with you? You didn't think you should tell me?
I don't know, Peyton. Do you go around telling everyone every mistake you've ever made? Advertise your screw-ups?
I never get the chance. Usually somebody else advertises them for me.
Look. He leaned toward her and slid his hand down her arm in an attempt to grasp her hand.
The past is the past.
She jerked her arm out of reach and took a step back.
The past is the past? You're only seeing things from her side.
We weren't working. There was no chemistry.
And it was only after you slept with her that you figured that out?
It came out at a higher volume than she'd intended. I didn't make her do anything she didn't want to do. I didn't lie to her.
Well, don't you deserve a humanitarian award?
He scowled at her and then angled his head around her at the house.
What's she doing here anyway?
Planning the baby's funeral.
Joshua didn't respond.
His face was completely blank.
Zero emotion.
I'm sitting in there planning the funeral of your baby. Her voice was now so intense and thundering that the entire town probably heard her.
Quiet down, he hissed.
Don't you dare tell me to quiet down. He lowered his eyes. The pitiful flowers hung limp at his side. And when she noted that they were obviously purchased from a convenience store instead of Val's, she got even angrier.
Misty can't afford a burial. Are you going to help her?
Joshua looked back up at Peyton with gritted teeth. When she told me she was pregnant, I told her I didn't want anything to do with it. I told her to have an abortion, and if she didn't, I wouldn't be helping her out later. She didn't have it. I'm off the hook.
Off the hook?
She's the one who decided to keep it. The rage that built up in Peyton scared even her. And her screams must have gotten Cole's attention because within seconds, she saw him appear on the porch and sit down in the chair next to Nana. Peyton swallowed hard, glanced back out at the street, and realized people had stopped to watch the second Peyton Brave show in under 24 hours. Joshua placed his head next to hers and spoke in a hostile whisper.
If she would have just done what I told her, she wouldn't be in this mess. All she ended up was with a dead baby anyway.
Peyton's elbow made contact with Joshua's nose before she even contemplated ways to attack. He threw his hands over his nose and screamed down in pain.
What the, you crazy, you broke my nose!
Peyton raised her chin and closed in again so there were only a few inches between them.
Good!
Joshua's eyes watered. He held his hands under his nose to catch the drips, but not before a gush of blood ran down his chin, drained under the ground, and splattered all over his shoes.
Now are you going to do something to help Misty or not?
Hell no! He looked down at his newly crimson shoes and leaned farther forward so the injury drained onto the dirt. Noticing his body weight was off balance, Peyton hauled off and kneed him in the stomach with as much power as she could muster. He groaned and fell to the ground in a clump. Out of nowhere, Cole appeared, pulled her away, and wrapped his arms around her, controlling her flailing arms.
She's whipping Rhett! Nana screamed with more joy than Mama would appreciate.
Peyton turned to the porch and found her parents and Misty standing next to Nana in shock.
Peyton Bell Brave, her Mama screamed, as she descended the porch steps and took flight across the yard. What are you doing? Stop it right this instant!
Settle down, Daddy shouted as he closed in on the chaos.
Everyone, just simmer down!
Mama was wide-eyed.
Peyton, what has gotten into you?
You're crazy, Joshua yelled. Just as crazy as the rest of your family. Cole released Peyton but lurched forward to place himself between the brawler and her victim.
I'd rather be crazy than a scuzz bucket.
Peyton threw her fist toward Joshua's temple, but Cole caught her hand before it made contact.
Peyton Brave, not another word,
her mother screeched. Cole eventually let go of Peyton's fist, and she was free to pace back and forth across the yard like a caged animal looking for an escape.
People die, Mama.
Her mama stumbled backward, as if Peyton had punched her.
Teenage girls get stolen out of bus station bathrooms. Boys use girls and then throw them away.
Mama's eyes suddenly filled with tears. Peyton, please stop.
occult urge, you're about to say something you're going to regret. There's more bad in this world than there is good, and no matter how hard you try to make me, I'm not going to walk around acting like there isn't. Peyton couldn't stop the flood of thoughts that raced through her mind and poured out of her mouth. I'm tired of trying to be perfect. I'm tired of trying to act like my sister isn't dead or being tortured by some monster every day. And most of all, I'm tired of you. I'm tired of you running away from our house of mourning and misery and leaving me to deal with all of it on my own. We don't get to just check out and pretend like none of this is happening. Mama stiffened her back and straightened her shirt by giving it a tug on the bottom hem. I won't be talked to like this. She turned and walked away, causing Peyton to fly into hysterics. Don't walk away from me. That's all you ever do. Walk away. Cole grabbed Peyton's arm, spun her around, picked her up, threw her over his shoulder, and marched toward the house. She screamed all the way inside, and even after the door closed behind them, she screamed like a banshee. Calm yourself down or I'm going to have to do something drastic, Cole ordered. A year of pent-up anger had finally boiled to the surface. A year of being silent. A year of trying to do and say everything right, and she could think of no reason to stop screaming. Cole stomped up the stairs, into the bathroom, where he turned on the shower and tossed her in, fully clothed. When the cold water hit her, she shrieked and flailed around. Turn it off! Not until you settle down, Cole shouted. She thrashed around a minute more before her legs gave out, forcing her to slide down the wall and land in a heap.
I'm not crying because I'm sad. I'm crying because I'm ticked off. My elbow hurts.
Do what you need to do, he answered.
I will.
She lifted her face to the water, let it wash over her, and convinced herself that the shower hid her cries. Cole walked out of the door, leaving the cool water to wash the heat of Peyton's anger down the drain. After a few minutes, he came to turn off the water, handed her a baggie full of ice, put the lid down on the toilet, sat, and turned to face her. Are you going to be okay? She shook her head and placed the ice on her elbow.
I don't know.
Peyton rubbed her face with her free hand and glanced down at her palm. It was smeared with black mascara.
I can't pretend anymore.
Pretend what?
That everything's okay. Or will be.
She felt her chest tremble, brimming with more cries.
I don't think it will, Cole. I don't think things will ever be okay again.
They'll be different. And maybe sometimes they'll feel okay, and other times they won't. None of that's going to change based on whether or not you're pretending. All you're doing is causing yourself more grief.
I can't beat that anymore. It's exhausting,
she admitted.
I know.
His voice was gentle, soothing. A part of her understood why her sister could sit and talk to him for hours. Missy poked her head in the bathroom. Peyton, the police are here. They want you downstairs. Cole slapped his hands on his face and groaned before he stood and looked down at Peyton. Go change your clothes. He then turned to Misty. Go downstairs and tell them we'll be down in a minute. By the time Peyton and Cole walked out the front door, a few minutes later, there was quite a scene outside the funeral home. Two cop cars were parked in front. A throng of people were being held back by a few police officers. And Sheriff Jackson, Joshua's dad, and the mayor all stood in a clump by Joshua and his car. Nana hadn't moved from her chair. And Peyton noticed Misty was sitting on the front step, feeding Pugsley Pringles. Miss Peyton Brave, the sheriff barked as he walked toward her. Joshua said you inflicted bodily harm. I've got to take you down to the station.
If I had known I'd be arrested, I would have done more damage.
Not helping. Cole hid the warning behind a cough.
I mean, yes, sir.
Accepting her fate, Peyton held her hands out to the sheriff. I'm not going to cuff you. He lightly gripped Peyton by the arm and led her to the front seat of the cop car. After guiding her in, he shut the door behind her and then walked back to the porch to interview the witnesses. Peyton slunk down in her seat until she could barely see out the window. She focused on the instrument panel in front of her. The view was too familiar. Chapter 11, August 13th, 2016.
16, 8:25 a.m.
Peyton sat sideways in the front seat of the patrol car, with her legs draped out of the doorway. She vaguely was aware that the cotton fabric of her maxi dress had pulled up above her knees, but she didn't feel strong enough to stand up and adjust it.
"Just stay right here, Peyton. Try to relax. I'll be back to get you in a minute."
Sheriff Jackson gently squeezed her shoulder and then walked over to Nana and Lester, a bus station employee. As they spoke, the sheriff took notes in a small notebook and occasionally glanced up at them over the top of his sunglasses. She couldn't remember how she got there. Her eyes darted to the movements and sounds surrounding her, but nothing clicked. Her fingers trembled in her lap. Something was wrong, like a part of her was missing. Sheriff Jackson raised a walkie-talkie to his lips, and Peyton heard his words over the scanner in the car.
"Dispatch, this is 285. Do you copy?"
285, this is dispatch. Go ahead."
She inspected her white-tipped fingers and rubbed them on her legs to try to get some feeling back. Sheriff Jackson walked a few steps away and turned his back to Nana.
"Code 2, Cornwell Bus Station. I've got a 1057.
10-4.
Static blared for several seconds before a voice returned over the radio. "Any units available for a 1057 at Cornwell Bus Station?" She rubbed her legs even harder. None of it made sense.
253 responding ETA 3 minutes.
268 responding ETA 6 minutes.
10-4.
Static. Silence.
285?
"Go ahead," the sheriff prompted. "Description, please." "White female, aged 16, brown hair." He looked down at his notepad, wearing blue jeans, a red t-shirt with a peace sign emblem, and black Converse sneakers. Peyton's hand went completely still. Her ears perked. Her chest ached. Peyton squeezed her eyes shut, clenched her fist, and held her breath, counting the seconds just like she and Dylan often would between bolts of lightning. The more seconds that passed, the safer it became, and the closer the storm was to being over.
"Name?" Jackson continued. Peyton's body stiffened. Not enough seconds had passed. She wasn't safe.
Dylan, Lorianne, Brave. Chapter 12, August 13th, 2017, 7:12 p.m. Peyton sat alone in a small holding cell in the back of the jailhouse. The sheriff wanted to keep her away from the drunkards in cell 1. Based on the catcalls they made as she walked by, there was a chance she'd still overhear some things her parents wouldn't appreciate, but her classmates would enjoy hearing about later. She was trying to tune some of those comments out when Officer Harris slid the door open, walked in, and placed her book bag next to her on the bench.
"Your mama wants you working on your homework. Said you might as well make some use of your incarceration."
Peyton rolled her eyes at her mama's passive-aggressive scolding.
"Thanks, Ian.
Once they press charges, we'll get you fingerprinted and such."
"Wonderful,"
she quipped. Ian was several years older than Peyton. He was often given 1152, code for funeral detail to the burial site. Whenever he was on duty, she brought him a cup of coffee he could sip on while he sat in his patrol car waiting for the funeral service to end.
"I left you one piece of contraband," he whispered.
"Contraband?"
"You know, things you're not allowed to have."
He loudly smacked his gum, then took it out and stuck it under the bench. Peyton recoiled.
"I left you a pen, all right?" he said. "You're not supposed to have pens in here."
"Why? What am I going to do with a pen?" He looked down at her and raised his eyebrows.
"Oh."
She took a deep breath and let it out in a quick burst of air, causing a strand of hair to soar.
"How about a hairband? Did you leave me one of those?"
"Nope.
Contraband. Got it. But I'm not sure what I could accomplish with 3 inches of elastic."
"You'd be surprised." Peyton chuckled.
"Trust me, I'm not going to hurt myself any more than I already have."
"Good to know."
"At least I don't think so,"
she muttered. He rocked back on his heels and folded his arms across his chest. "I'll be keeping a close eye on you."
"Knock yourself out."
He walked out of the cell and slammed the door behind him with a loud clang that hurt her ears and rattled the bars.
"Stinks in here,"
she yelled as he disappeared down the hall.
"I know."
She looked down at her backpack,
then reached in and pulled out the first book her fingers touched, The Complete Tales and Poems of Edgar Allan Poe. It was the one piece of homework she actually enjoyed doing every night. Peyton felt an odd connection to Poe. He was slightly unhinged and had a bend toward the morbid. Since she was surrounded by death and literally had a cemetery as her backyard, his writings made sense. Over the last few weeks, she'd almost found them comforting. Peyton pulled out the single piece of contraband, and with the tip carved Peyton on the already heavily distressed bench, she stared at her etching. The longer she focused, the faster and harder her heart beat. She counted the seconds and waited for the storm within her to subside. But when she realized that the rage was only intensifying, she violently scratched through the name, marring it beyond recognition. She slammed the pen down and looked up at the gray ceiling. Somehow, even the surface several feet above her had been violated by previous cell guests. Graffiti and scratches marred the already peeling gray paint, and she wondered if she'd be shocked if she knew which of her fellow townspeople spent time sitting in the same dingy cave. One thing was for sure. The townspeople would be shocked to know that Peyton Bell Brave now had. She focused back on the book and turned to page 304, found the place she'd left off. Presently, I heard a loud groan, and I knew it was the groan of mortal terror. It was not a groan of pain or of grief. Oh, no! It was the low, stifled sound that arises from the bottom of the soul when overcharged with awe. I knew the sound well. The words felt familiar, a familiar sensation often visited her when she slept and drifted around her in moments of silence. She closed the book, which was now shaking in her hands, threw it to the dingy floor, and picked up the pen. Poe. She chiseled the name into a part of the wood with no words around it. Then she carved it again and added a second name. Brave. Hey. She lifted her head and was astonished by who she saw standing on the opposite side of the metal bars. Cole? I heard you here. Did you get arrested too?
No. She noticed him shuffle his feet a bit.
I figured Dylan would want me here. She gulped, stunned by his bluntness. The topic of Dylan was never the elephant in the room when it came to Cole, and Peyton appreciated it. She'd want me to make sure you were all right. He watched Ian unlock the door and slide it open, and then walked inside the small cell as Ian walked away, leaving the door wide open. You seemed pretty distraught back in the bathroom. Are you okay?
No.
She felt the back of her throat tighten, a sign that tears were about to come, and no matter how hard she tried to swallow down the lump in her throat, the tears broke through anyway.
I feel like I'm losing my mind.
He walked farther into the cell and sat down next to her on the bench.
Like, I can't think. I can't remember.
Peyton, Poe. She raised her eyes to meet his.
Call me Poe.
He stared back at her, and she felt like he was trying to look through the tears in her eyes and somehow understand what was going on in her head.
Okay, Poe.
I would think the way you're feeling is totally normal. Tomorrow's the anniversary of her going missing. We all still have a million questions,
but I should know the answers. I should remember something, anything, and I don't.
Since she couldn't control the tears, she let them fall.
I feel more alone than I've ever felt, and now I'm stuck in here, and...
The sheriff told me you're free to go. They didn't press charges.
What?
She wiped the tears from her eyes with the back of her hand.
Why not?
My dad reminded Joshua's dad that the gentleman's club has a lot of crime, and all that crime forces him to have cameras in the club. Mrs. Tubin probably wouldn't like finding out that her husband spends so much of his office time not sitting in his office. She gasped, not that she was shocked by Mr. Tubin's behavior, but that Carl would be so willing to make it known.
He blackmailed Mr. Tubin?
We call it more of a friendly reminder. He couldn't let you suffer for trying to help a friend. Truth is, Joshua deserved worse than you gave him.
I thought Joshua would, remember he's a human being and want to help? It's like he has no heart.
He doesn't. Cole shook his head. He bent down and grabbed the book lying on the floor.
You know, I think other people moved on after last year. And they forget that in some ways, we're still stuck back there.